Hello, everybody. Good afternoon, depending on where you are right now. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm really excited to be moderating today's webinar on best practices in making outgoing calls in an era of call labeling and call blocking. Trying to reach consumers on the phone has never been this hard for companies in the credit collection industry, and new technology that is automatically blocking calls from being connected or labeling calls as potentially fraudulent or spam is making it even harder. In this webinar, sponsored by TCN, we have a panel of leading executives from across the credit and collection industry who are here to share their insights into how to reach consumers on the phone in this day and age. As I mentioned, this webinar is being generously sponsored by TCN. You get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick second and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. I publish unique and curated content, maintain a number of email newsletters, host great webinars like this one, and offer a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site's free for anyone to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone uses it daily. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Robert Blair is currently the Director of Data Systems and Contact Strategy at Valor Intelligent Processing. At Valor, Robert is responsible for managing the data systems and driving the company's contact strategy. He's been in the ARM industry for more than 10 years and is focused on using analytical data to increase performance, efficiency, and revenue. William Chris Duncombe is President at First Collection Services, a receivables management firm serving clients nationwide since 1969. Chris has more than 30 years of experience in the collection industry, serving in sales, operations, and executive leadership. He has received industry honors, including having been named the top 25 most influential collection professionals by Collection Advisor Magazine and inducted to the Hall of Fame by Ontario Systems, the industry's largest software provider. He is a past president of his state's Collectors Association and is active within ACA International. He volunteers in his community as a commissioner for the North Little Rock Housing Authority and is a member of the Rotary Club 99 of Little Rock, Arkansas. Mike Hiller joined American Profit Recovery in 2005 and has served as vice president of collections since 2012. He is an ACA scholar as well as a licensed collection manager in Michigan and has served as the subject matter expert for the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. While attending Central Michigan University, Mike earned degrees in entrepreneurship, psychology, and philosophy. Following graduation, he pursued postgraduate studies at the University of Detroit Mercy, go Titans, graduated in 2007 from U of D Mercy with top honors and a master's degree in psychology. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and recording will be made available in the next day or so on AccountsRecovery.net webinars recording page. Finally, I want to ask everybody to reserve a minute and fill out the feedback survey that should pop up on your screen after today's webinar is over. You should also receive a link tomorrow, roughly right around this time, to via email to access your survey. Your participation and your answers helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and to find the speakers you want to hear from, which is definitely the case with what we have for you today. And with that, we can transition into the most important part of the webinar, and that's hearing from our great speakers. So first, what I'd like to do is maybe just sort of get a lay of the land from each of you, and I'll ask you, how would you currently rate the state of affairs in the credit collection industry as it pertains to call blocking? How has that maybe sort of give it a grade or some sort of quantification and talk about how you think that grade has trended in the past 6 to 12 months? And Mike Hiller, since you're up on my screen, we'll give you the honor of going first.
I'm up. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. So we're definitely getting the consumers that are going to say that, my phone is saying possible fraud. That's new. Where they might have said, we think this is fraud in the past, now their phone is telling it to them, right? So, but when I look at the numbers, and we're going to talk about this a little later on in the webinar, I do have to wonder if it's just confirmation bias by those particular individuals. But I think it's part of a bigger conversation as far as, rating where we're at in the industry as it pertains to call blocking. I mean, so having a culture that embraces change I mean, that's going to be important. And that's kind of what we're up against here when we have these things that constantly come out and they're new and they're novel and we have to figure out what to do with them. But what I think is, if you don't have that culture of change, then you're more inclined to decline and or failure. And the organizations, you know, a lot of us are going to survive in spite of the challenges we face. But I would conclude that few are able to excel because of them. And that's where you want to be. You want to be able to excel because of those challenges. And what I mean by confirmation bias is, you know, I don't think we're speaking with the debtors who previously didn't want to speak with us anyway. So the consumers that we're losing, again, as we delve down into the numbers, might be exactly who we're okay with not speaking with. So more on that later, but just keep that in the back of your mind.
Excellent. Hey, Christian.
Yeah. This is Robert. I would agree with that assessment. I think the change or being able to manage change and being able to forecast change and, you know, the way the landscape has changed over the years, I think is pivotal. You know, it's tough to say is it trending down or trending up? I mean, I think your consumer base is getting smarter. I think that they understand things. Obviously, the internet, you know, more and more people are using the internet over the last 5-10 years. So that's definitely increased your consumer knowledge about, you know, let me just Google this number and see kind of who this is. But I think that you made a great point, you know, Mike, in regards to the folks that we wouldn't necessarily want to talk to anyways. I feel like, you know, your overall consumer base is still, you know, that curiosity is still going to spike and say, like, yeah, I wonder who this is, keeps calling me every day. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to have that trend. But on the other side of the coin, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, I think that, you know, the government is doing kind of a better job, I guess you could say, than they were 5-10 years ago, being, you know, kind of non-existent, kind of in this discussion. So, you know, I think that it's, I think we're moving towards, you know, a better day, if so to say. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of collection agencies, telemarketing firms that, you know, very few kind of give us a bad name. And, you know, I think that it's important that, you know, we continue to do things morally, ethically, so that, you know, when you get that little pop up on your phone, you tend to answer it. And I think that as we move towards this, this new future of the FCC wanting to be involved in the call blocking and the caller ID, the truth in caller ID, I think that that's a good thing. I just think that we need to keep, as a collection industry, you know, continuing to advocate and continuing to have a voice, and, you know, educate folks that, you know, hey, we're here to do a job. We serve a great purpose, and, you know, answer the phone and we're willing to help you.
I think that Rob just hit on something pretty important. Answer the phone, which a lot of people don't do today. It's talking about the call blocking apps. It's a little bit of a cause and effect. I mean, all of the telemarketing calls that have been generated over the last few years and how they have changed a consumer's mentality, including me. I don't answer my phone the way I used to. I used to answer my phone and talk to just about anybody because that's how I would learn a little bit about how to train a collector to be better, but with some of the telemarketing pitches that people would make to me on the phone. But, you know, I personally get 6, 7, 8 telemarketing calls a day that I'm ignoring. And it is, how do we get people to answer the phone? How do we get people to return our calls, call us back? It's using the tools that are out there for us today to in ways that are a little bit better than we did yesterday to continue forward in this industry.
So, I mean, I guess in the for the purposes of sort of furthering discussion, allow me to try and grossly oversimplify. Am I right in saying that it's really the call blocking, call labeling isn't really a, you know, the significant problem that maybe some people think it is or have claimed it to be, because likely you're not, you know, those people weren't going to answer the phone in the first place? Or are there still elements to this technology that are causing calls that may have been answered to not be answered?
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I can only speak for myself and what we've experienced. And if you're an agency who doesn't leave voicemails and does a lot of auto dialing, you may be seeing a larger impact on your bottom line. I think if you're leaving messages, you know, and you're more strategic how you're trying to contact people, then you can kind of ride the wave of the countervailing effects here. And the countervailing effects that I'm referring to are, it used to be 5, 7, 8 years ago that the vast majority of people didn't have smartphones. You leave a message or you call a number, and 8 hours later, maybe they get a voicemail at home and call you back. But everyone's got a cell phone in their pocket now. The majority of consumers anyway have a cell phone on them at any point. So that's kind of a countervailing effect as opposed to these call blocking, which, by the way, the shaken and stir, it's not going to be fully into effect until the end of the year. So we saw it at first, the FCC came out and said that robocalls are the scourge of civilization, never retreating from the dramatic, I suppose. But really, it was AT&T that came out first, and they offered it. What the FCC is not requiring is an automatic opt-in. They're really leaving it up to the carriers. And look, will it cut down on spam calls? Sure. Is it going to eliminate scammers? Yeah, probably not. The one thing that this is going to do for sure is going to save carriers billions of dollars, with a B. And I think that's really where their incentive lies. You know, I think that's why they got behind the FCC changing over this ruling. And that's what they don't want a bunch of false numbers that they have to pay for those phone calls to be made, regardless if they're answered. So it's going to save them a lot of money. So I think that as we move through this process, you're going to see solutions for legitimate companies, to prove who we are and why we're calling. And you're going to see that it's really going to cut down on those calls, like Chris was talking about, where I ignore them too. If it goes to voicemail, if someone doesn't leave me a voicemail, that number is getting blocked. I'm conditioned the same way. I would agree with that.
And I would just to add on to that, I would say, it's definitely not a non-issue. I wouldn't go that far to say that, you know, who cares if our calls getting spammed up or blocked. I mean, I think it's important that we stay on, the leading edge of this, but, you know, at the same time, you know, it's just like, you know, when the stock market fluctuates up or down, I mean, you can make money when it's going up or you can make money when it's going down. And I think that as long as you have a solid strategy, an omni-channel strategy where your bread and butter isn't necessarily only over the telephone, then, I don't think that you're going to be impacted, as much going forward. But, you know, at the end of the day, the more people you can get to answer the phones, the better off that you'll be. So I think that it's definitely an issue. I think that we're getting a little bit better, and I think the future looks bright. But I wouldn't say that it's a completely non-issue, at least from my perspective.
It's a major issue. And
yes, a major issue.
Yeah, so much so that in 2019, early in 2019, we signed on with Numerical and worked with them to make sure that all of our numbers were properly registered, and to really try to combat this, they label and they work with the carriers and work with a lot of the different apps. And I know there's a couple of companies that do this, but they really work to see to it that you don't have it with any of the main people that are doing the blocking, that your numbers are not coming across as fraudulent. I have very, 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 most of my numbers that if they fall into a low risk category, and if it increases to above a low risk, there's reporting that we have in place now that lets us know. And we look and we see how we're using those numbers and get them back in the low risk category. But it is taking a look at what's out there, what's going on, what's impacting us that we need to figure out how to deal with today and deal with it. It is something that we just can't take anything for granted. We have to, we got to stay out in front of it. And I think people in our industry do a really, really good job of that. And period, we all do a good job, or most of us do, staying in front of these things.
Well, excellent. Great start to the conversation. I just want to hit the pause button briefly and talk a little bit about the sponsor for today's webinar, TCN. TCN is a leading provider of cloud-based call center technology for enterprises, contact centers, BPOs, and collection agencies worldwide. Founded in 1999, TCN combines a deep understanding of the needs of call center users with a highly affordable delivery model, ensuring immediate access to robust call center technology, such as predictive dialer, IVR, call recording, and business analytics required to optimize operations and adhere to TCPA regulations. Its always-on cloud-based delivery model provides customers with immediate access to the latest version of the TCN solution, as well as the ability to quickly and easily scale and adjust to evolving business needs. TCN serves various Fortune 500 companies and enterprises in multiple industries, including newspaper, collection, education, healthcare, automotive, political, customer service, and marketing. TCN is engaged and actively involved in understanding TCPA changes and how it is changing the industry. TCN regularly speaks to local and national leaders to help educate them on matters of TCPA and compliance for the betterment of the industry as a whole. For more information, please visit www.tcn.com. Thanks again to TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. I'm sure I speak for all of us listening today when I say we appreciate your generous support. Now, let's pick up with our discussion. Moving on, let's talk a little bit about, it's a serious problem, which I don't think anybody will disagree with. I'm curious if there's a way to which anybody can quantify, is there a bottom line dollar amount that call blocking, call labeling is costing companies in this industry, either in the terms of, you know, more effort that goes into having to reach people or less dollars that are being collected because right party contact rates aren't as high as they used to be. I'm wondering if there's anybody that has done this or tried to do this assessment and come up with anything. Does anyone want to start first this time?
The answer for us is no. We've not been able to completely break it down to a dollar value, because whenever you take a look at it, this is just one of many challenges with us reaching people and getting people on the phone. And, you know, it's, To break it down into a dollar amount just for this, it's very difficult. Now we do break it down, and we can tell you how over the, you know, how since 2015, it, you know, our call right party contacts and how much more effort we're having to put out to get someone on the phone, but it's not just because of call blocking. It's just because of the differences in how the world we live in today and you know, how, what's going on now.
Yeah, I would, this is Rob. I would agree with that assessment. You know, if anybody can quantify it and put a dollar value on it, you know, Valor's hiring. So, let me know, you know, by all means. I'm sure we'd all like to get that guy if we could find, if there is such a guy or gal that can figure that out. But, you know, obviously we, you know, we can look at historicals and see kind of what our RPC rates are, contact rates. And, you know, I can say that, you know, there are vendors out there that can help with your reputation, your phone number reputation. You know, some work with the carriers to tell you or to tell them, hey, this guy is not a scam, don't flag them. You know, others just tell you, hey, what does it look like as far as the spam score? You know, this phone number is a high spam score, this phone number is a low spam score. And then you, you know, you kind of cool them down, swap them out. You know, you kind of have to make that strategy internally. But, you know, I will say that when we started using one of those vendors, we did see a noticeable increase in contact rates, just from knowing, hey, which one of these numbers that we're using is a high spam score. I don't know exactly what formula or algorithm or databases they use to determine, you know, what's high spam, but I can tell you that they are getting, you know, legitimate data, because when we start using a number, we can see that spam score start to increase, and there'd be no way for them to know that we're using that particular number. So there's something to it. It's just, you know, the why, you know, why it's happening. It's just, how do you then strategize around that? You know, you'll get yourself in hot water by just swapping out the numbers all willy nilly, because then it looks even more scammy and spammy. So, you know, there's a fine line. There's a delicate balance that you have to walk, and you have to put into perspective, you know, ROI. You know, are you going to pay thousands of dollars to a vendor to increase your reputation or to swap out your numbers or whatever the case may be? Is that worth it? In our case, it is. The vendor that we're using, it's definitely worth it. The price point is great, and it seems to help us. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody's looking to say, like, what is the dollar amount it's costing us? And I can tell you, as an industry, it's in the millions, but as far as each individual company, it's really hard to break down, because you don't know why people aren't answering. Is it because it shows up as spam, or is it because they don't want to talk to you? Is it, you know, there's so many things going on to be able to pinpoint, you know, this is the dollar amount for spam and scam call blocking and tagging.
Yeah, and Robert's right. The amount, we haven't determined it either, by the way, but it's definitely not decimal dust. It is definitely significant. I couldn't help but sit here thinking, you know, the type of person who gets a call that their phone says possible spam and they don't answer, right? We discussed that. But the type of person who sees possible spam and picks up, I don't know if I want to talk to them anyway. I don't know. But yeah, we look at RPCs too, and ours haven't declined. They haven't increased. They kind of leveled off. But what we found when we took a little deeper dive into the RPCs, you guys, is we're speaking with fewer unique customers, but we're speaking with more higher value, what we would call higher value customers at a higher frequency. So if we're not collecting on that first call, we find that we're speaking with them a second or a third time, as secondary and tertiary contacts from higher value accounts. So as far as revenue, that's increased, but the RPCs have stayed the same. So kind of interesting.
One of the most interesting things that we experienced whenever we started using Numerical was the first time that we looked at their reporting and saw how our phone numbers were appearing, what name was appearing in the caller ID. And, you know, phone numbers have histories. The caller ID number has a history, and it's not always who we are, it's who had that number before us. And that is one of the biggest things that we got corrected, because we do first and third party, and making sure that the numbers were, the names were reading properly in a caller ID, really, that helped us tremendously, to because there were some kind of funny things that showed up in the name field.
Yes, I would agree with that. Ultimately, you only have so much control over that. I mean, so you register the phone, you put the CNAM, and it's up to the terminating carrier to look to see how often they're going to update their database. So it's important that you go back and check your caller ID numbers to say, like, what are they registered as? Because like you said, if they're not updating their database, or they're looking at something that's a month, 2 month, 3 month old, it might stay. I think we had some that were like the VA, like I said, Veterans Affairs. And, mm-hmm. Obviously you can't control that unless you know it. So it's definitely important to kind of know what you're showing up as. And, we make a pretty good habit. I think it's a pretty good, habit. And obviously it's anecdotal and you can't look at maybe every number, but I spin up a few test accounts and I put my phone number and a couple of the other operators' phone numbers in there. And, we just wait for the call. And when we get the call, we see what it looks like. What does it show up as? And like I said, it's anecdotal, but it gives you an idea of like what the debtor is seeing when they get that call. And if it says, hey, scam likely, or it says Veterans Affairs, or it says, whatever, we found the best strategy is to use a combination of TFNs that show the name of the company, and then kind of mix that in with LCIDs, local caller ID packages, to just have the city and state. So we alternate using the toll-free number that displays the hey, this is Val, we're calling you from a toll-free number, and then we'll if we don't get a good contact after a couple tries, we'll switch to the local, and kind of mixing it up there so that they're not always seeing that local number come through, because you will get people that will answer with a toll-free number, and then you'll get people that won't. So it's definitely good to alternate your strategy in that regard.
Yeah, we in the testing you mentioned too, Robert, it dawned on me that we do that as well. And what we'll also do is get some of those free apps, the free call blocking apps, and then a bunch of us have different carriers, whether it's Verizon or AT&T, Sprint, whatever, to do that testing locally, just to kind of get a temperature, to kind of test the waters and see what comes out. I think that's important too. So it sounds like you guys are registering your numbers. Let me ask you this. Do you, Chris or Robert, do you guys retire your numbers after so many dials, after so many months? Are you recycling numbers, or how do you manage getting new caller IDs and mixing those in with your existing?
That's a great question. Yeah. So we, here at Valor, we do swap out our numbers, and there's no exact science behind it. It's not like, every 3 months we're doing it. We may, if we tend to use a number a lot, if it's, say, it's a heavy, if it's a New York or a, Los Angeles kind of area code, obviously, if you have a lot of accounts there and you're making a lot of calls there, it's going to spam up faster. But what we've actually found is we've been able to cool off our phones. They still have a historical spam score that's pretty high, but the current spam score kind of cools off. And so when we did some testing on that, we were able to cool off some of our numbers and reuse them, therefore cutting expenses and the cost of getting numbers. But we do retire the numbers. We stop using them. Obviously, we keep them on. If anybody wants to call us, typically 90 days or more. But then we stop using them. But we have gone back, and after a month or two of this number being cooled off, it's not flagging a spam, at least from the vendors that we use. And we throw it back in the mix. So it can get really expensive if you're trying to continuously swap out your numbers and use new numbers, because you have to keep the old ones on, so now you're paying for two. So we do a kind of a method of cooling off and swapping out, just based upon what we're seeing in the numbers.
Okay. Chris, do you do something similar?
We do.
But
by registering the numbers, it really has helped us in managing that, because that's really helped. one of the other things that we do is whenever we make a right party contact, we record the caller ID, put that on the account record that we used when we made the right party contact, and the next call that we make out to that person, we're making sure we're pushing out that same number. I will also say that if sometimes you have a little situation where it's, I answered the phone. I didn't really want to answer your phone call. So we may push that out 3-4 times. And then if we're not able to make a right party contact again, we'll switch to a different number. But people never accidentally answer one of our phone calls, though, do they?
No, that never happens. No, it got me thinking because we used to recycle our, no, this is years ago, but we used to recycle our numbers after Sergey Lemberg caught wind of one of our caller IDs, then we'd recycle it. Nowadays we're recycling it a lot more frequently. You know, some of our TCN caller IDs, it's every 30 to 60, and then our more local ones are more like 3 months, but.
Right.
So I understand the way it works is the more you call, the more times you use a number to make an outgoing call, it's not necessarily the more trusted that number becomes, but it's actually the opposite.
That's what we've experienced.
From the experience that we've had, it's similar in that, you know, I don't think anyone knows where they're getting this data from, but it seems like when we cool off a number, it tends to lower the spam score enough to where, you know, folks start answering again.
That's interesting. Okay. I'm curious, what impact or what have the importance of other communication channels, letters, text messages, email, direct route, voicemail, things like that. Are those becoming more important in this new dynamic of where it's tougher to get people on the phone? Is that something that helps collection industry contact rates?
Most definitely. And it's something that in our industry that we have constantly been good at. We've been in business for 50 years, and I've been involved in our company for over 30. And it's constantly trying to figure out what can we do to get, we all want the inbound calls, but what can we do to increase our contact rates and make it where the contact rates are more valuable when we get people on the phone? You know, we've never been a company that just floods calls out. We rotate times of the day. We rotate days of the week that we're trying to reach people at a time that, you know, we're not just going to blow up people's phones. And I don't think a lot of people in our industry do that anymore. But yes, the texting, email, putting different look on our letters that we mail out to try to get people communicating with us, having web access where people can log in and make payments to us. I mean, we're all trying anything and everything we can to be available for a consumer.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, I think that having an omni-channel approach is important. I know from our perspective, it's still a very small percentage of how we're reaching out to consumers and revenue, but you know, the online portal is key, especially with the newer generations and the, you know, growing up with the internet and smartphones and all that. I mean, there's just the most possible paths that you have to getting the bill paid is definitely a good thing, especially on these self-service options. I mean, they're cheaper, You know, from an ROI perspective, from an expense perspective, they're cheaper than, you know, having an agent on the phone. But, you know, this is collections, and, you know, it's collections for a reason. You know, most of the time, if folks just were willing to pay the bill by sending them a letter, they would have already done that. I mean, I think that you definitely, you get the low hanging fruit, you get the guy that got his tax return, or you get the gal that, you know, got a big bonus and I'm ready to change my life, you know, kind of thing, or their life's changed. But at the end of the day, I mean, I still think that, you know, having an agent on the phone, outbound and inbound collections is still going to be your primary revenue source. So, you know, we want to try to attack this problem. But yeah, I mean, email, text, you know, website payments, all of IVR, all of those kind of options are great to have to kind of help combat this. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you definitely get some scenarios where folks had no idea that the bill was owed. Thanks for reaching out to me. I don't, how did I let this slip? Whatever. But I mean, I think the majority of the time we're making a call, folks know, hey, I owe a bill. Hey, it's a bill collector. I don't want to talk to them right now. I don't want to, you know, pay. And, you know, to the panelist point that made the argument earlier is, we're somewhat okay with that, you know, until we get to a point where we have more resources. You know, you only have so much time and resources, so you want to try to, you know, help the folks that want the help. But we're definitely trying to mold to kind of combat this in other ways rather than just, you know, head on. How do we face the call blocking problem? Maybe there's another path that we can take that can, we can corral some of the consumers into this path that they otherwise wouldn't have answered with the traditional path.
And one of the themes that you guys just heard with what Chris and Robert was saying is, you know, what's convenient for the consumer. And what's exciting is if you're part of the 80% of agencies, that's what they said in Chicago this fall anyway, that aren't using omnichannel, is you can start by just using one of them, right? So get into the text messages or get into embedded emails. Or if you're reporting to one credit bureau, start reporting to two. If you're not reporting to any, start reporting to one. All very exciting, all things that can increase those inbound calls, all things that can increase contacts and certainly payments as well.
Mike, I want to touch on something you just mentioned, and it sort of ties back to something you mentioned before, and that's this notion of embracing change, which is something maybe the industry hasn't been that great at doing in the past. I guess, is it just as simple as a drop in RPC rates, a drop in collection dollars coming in, enough to get, you know, companies that really haven't been, you know, that have sort of followed the, if it isn't broke, don't fix it, you know, sort of a model? Is that enough to sort of show them that things are broken now and they really need to sort of, you know, be more innovative?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're hitting on something important there. We're all, you know, an organization is just a byproduct of the ecosystem, and you're either going to adapt and move on, or you're going to end up like the dinosaurs. I mean, and I think why I mentioned culture is if you have a culture where you're constantly challenging the status quo and constantly trying to fix things that aren't broken, you're going to be in a much better position than if you're forced to make a change and you're reluctant to do it. So maybe you're right. Maybe for some agencies, it takes something like this, something like the FCC coming down with this call blocking to really get people motivated. And that's okay too, but I would just challenge everybody to really think in terms of what's next, kind of like what Chris was saying at the head of this webinar, you know, what's next? What's coming down the road? What can we do differently? And not wait for the bureaucracy to make changes and then be reactive. You know, what can we do to be more proactive? I'm a huge proponent of that. You know, so there's a couple things that come to mind when you ask that, Mike. One is, you know, this reluctance to change. And I'm going to paraphrase because I don't know the exact quote, but I'm reminiscent of a Bertrand Russell quote where he said that part of the reason why older generations are slow to change, not the pick on older generations, but that's his quote, is because they see it as an affront to their way of life. So if your culture and your whole way of viewing your company and everything else is to be adaptive to change, then you're in a much better position if you take the mentality of if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, that's number one. Number two, Charles Darwin, when he spoke of survival of the fittest, he wasn't speaking about the strongest or the smartest. He was speaking specifically about responsiveness to change. It's no different in the animal world ecosystem or the corporate world ecosystem. Being responsive to change is what's going to get your company through anything that comes this year or next or 10 years from now.
And I think that the biggest thing that has made it easier for agencies of all sizes to start to use a lot of these tools is our technology providers. Our industry was really far behind 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology providers have really stepped up. They're much more engaged with the challenges that we're facing today than they ever have been, because they want to stay in this, they want to stay in business too. You know, we use TCM, and they really work to service our needs and look at where we're going and give us a tremendous amount of flexibility in how we're able to make outbound calls and receive inbound calls and use a lot of the technology out there. But it's all of the technology providers have really stepped up. Mike, you made a comment, you know, before you took us on live about how companies in our industry are really willing to share information and work together. And it, you know, ACA is, it's, I love the culture that ACA puts out there where, you know, you show up, you learn how to do things better. People, it's, that's where our friends are. And, you know, we really work together to figure these things out, and we've all got the same tools. It's just, how do we use them a little bit different than each other to be a little bit unique and a little bit better? And then the tools that we're starting to use, it's how do we figure out the ways that we can use them? That's the trick.
And Chris makes a great point. You know, if you're experiencing overload, right, with all these potential law changes, it's really only because you haven't dedicated enough resources to adaptation. Right. And I don't get paid by any of these vendors, but we use TCM too. And then what else do you do when you get the consumer on the phone? Right. So the RPC rates and phone call blocking and all that stuff. But are you really making the most of each of those contacts? And so what Chris said about a lot of these vendors. So another one that comes to my mind that we're working with right now is Balto, and the gamification and the metrics that they can supply us that speaks specifically to onboarding and training and fast tracking, but also speaks specifically to the metrics and the quality of those contacts. I'm really looking forward to what that brings next too.
One word that you've not heard on this call today is the word debtor. That really doesn't exist in our industry anymore. You know, we look at people as consumers, and I really personally feel like people in our industry are really trying to figure out how can we work with people to assist them in resolving the accounts that they have a challenge with. That's one of the biggest changes in our industry that I feel like have occurred in the last several years.
Robert, you had mentioned when we were talking before about switching numbers, sort of using a local number versus a toll-free number. And we had a question that came in from somebody listening asking, could using a local number be considered spoofing?
So I'm not a lawyer, so I, you know, can't give legal advice. I would ask your chief counsel or in-house counsel. But from our perspective, I mean, we own the numbers. It's our number. It's not as if we are creating a number out of thin air and it goes back to no one. That would be spoofing. So no, I mean, these are our numbers. We own them. There are a few states that have some language in their laws about, you know, I can't speak particulars, but there are some states where maybe it's a gray area, where maybe it's probably best you just use a toll-free number. And for those handful of states, we do. Some of the laws are specific to like telemarketers and stuff like that, but just, you know, not worth the risk there. But yeah, I mean, we own the numbers. They're our numbers. So, you know, we're not doing anything wrong. We're not spoofing. But again, I would, you know, check with your legal counsel and kind of get their thoughts on that. Everybody's kind of got to do what's best for them. But no, we don't think that's spoofing at all.
And if you own the number and you're registering it, then you're kind of insulating yourself a few times over.
Right.
But it doesn't question,
stop,
maybe
that, stop that one consumer from bringing up a lawsuit. So
right.
It certainly doesn't stop them from draining some legal resources for sure.
I had a question that I probably should have asked at the start of the webinar, and I apologize if I should have, but I'm curious, you know, how do you know if a number is being blocked or labeled as spam or versus a call that's just going unanswered? You know, if you're not using one of these service providers that we mentioned, Numerical or any of the other ones, you know, if you're just using your dialer, how do you know whether a call's being blocked or labeled or not?
I don't think you really do for 100% certainty. I mean, obviously you can look at historicals and say, hey, people aren't answering as much as they were, and, you know, make some possible, you know, just say maybe that has something to do with it, but you know, it's not like we're getting a response back that says, hey, this person saw it was scam likely, so they hit the red button. So, I mean, at least we don't, from our perspective, we don't have a way to know for certain, other than the ways that I talked about earlier, where, you know, we'll put our number in the database, we'll see what it comes up. We have all of our numbers are being monitored for spam scores. So, at, you know, every hour or so, I'm getting a report that shows, you know, hey, this one's spam. You know, and you can see a difference in answer rates for one that's showing up as spam versus one that isn't. So, you know, there is some sort of quantification there, but there's just so many variables and so many things. It's really tough to be the guy that says $43. That's what it costs us a minute, or, you know, whatever.
And I can hear your wheels turning, Mike. Are you thinking about offering a solution to make sure that nobody's calls get blocked, but we can't prove that your service is worth the value?
I don't know. Is there one there to be made?
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, we manually checked numbers before we started using Numerical, and you know, we would have a Verizon phone, an AT&T phone, T-Mobile phone. We would try all the apps, and you know, but there's a new app every other day too.
Right.
You know, Apple has a deal where you can block everything that's not in your contact list. That's pretty scary.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's I don't know what the options are with that one particularly for Apple, but I think there's one on Android too, where if they're not in your contact list, it just goes to voicemail. Yeah, maybe there's something there. Maybe one of the telephony, you know, geeks can look at that and say like, I see a pattern here. I can tell which ones are that, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of scary because you don't even have the opportunity. Like, it never even rings. It literally just goes to voicemail if that number's not on their phone list. So.
But, and there's an important distinction here that we're discussing too for your audience, Mike, is you're registering numbers with the carriers themselves. So Sprint, AT&T, et cetera. But then you have all of these third-party apps that yes, your vendor can work with these third-party apps, but that also necessarily assumes that these apps are willing to work with vendors or work with you to quote unquote register them with an app. So you have the service provider, that's the FCC thing, and then you also have these third party apps where if you get a free app or a paid for app, you can be part of a community that codes numbers as collection agency or codes numbers as potential spam, et cetera.
But you know, it is looking at how do we combat this? And one of the ways that you do is maybe in your validation notice, you put a phone number in there and say, hey, you may be receiving a phone call from this number or from this area. You know, it's whenever you start to use texting, we're trying to reach you from this number. Please put this in your contact list. It's whenever you are talking to someone on the phone, and you make a right party contact, get them, if they will, this is kind of funny to me to think about, but, you know, ask them to put your phone number in their contact list to be, so that it's easier for them to communicate. It's, you know, there's getting that person on the phone and talking with them and getting them to do some of this extra stuff. It every little thing helps.
I think that's a great idea, Chris. I do wonder, and how would you sort of deal with, you know, a situation where you're changing, you know, if you're changing numbers, does that affect that strategy at all?
We can push different numbers to our notices based upon what we're using at the time. But we don't ever completely retire a number to where we wouldn't answer that number.
Same here, yeah.
And that,
I think that's also something.
That's one, yeah, go ahead. That's one of the big things that people need to really pay attention to is make sure that if you're pushing a number out, you answer that dadgum number quickly. That's the most valuable thing in the world is an inbound call. And that is one of the things that really identifies something as spam quick. Is when people aren't, whenever a number is not answered, whenever people call in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, you definitely want to, you know, for our strategy is a little bit different. We use a unique telephone number on notices. So just so that we can track the ROI, you know, so we'll have a 1-800 number on this notice, but on this notice we'll have a different 1-800 number, and on this notice a different one. And we don't use those numbers to make outbound calls. So a little bit different than you guys' strategy, but we feel like that the lesser of the two evils, just being able to kind of track that inbound and that ROI. We sent 10,000 letters, we got 500 calls, and it yielded X amount of payments. But you know, and we don't, at least, you know, we're relatively new, so we don't plan on servicing all of our phones forever, but any of the numbers that ever go on a notice, we're always going to have that on. But our local numbers, you know, 3 months, 6 months, I mean, if you stop using the phone number today, you know, chances are someone's not going to go back 6 months later and call that local number.
No.
I guess it could happen, but, you know, we're balancing the risk versus reward there. But, you know, from our perspective, you know, we think that it's a good idea to have a specific number on the notice that's separate from one that you dial outbound, just, you know, so you can track it.
We're just about out of time. I've only got a few minutes left, and I'm curious, I'd like to get, you know, insights from each of you before we wrap up. Is this a problem that gets sort of quote unquote fixed? Is this something that, you know, as stir shaking comes out, then call blocking, call labeling becomes less of a concern? Or is this something, you know, is this something that's sort of going to be here to stay and the industry is going to have to sort of continually find ways to deal with it and innovate and make sure that they're sort of monitoring this? I'm just curious if this sort of temporary, permanent sort of situation, I'd like to get each of you to maybe weigh in, and Mike, maybe go first.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, if it's billions with a B for providers, it's here to stay regardless of what the FCC says. I mean, if 5 years from now or 1 year from now, we've got a new administration, the FCC gets some pressure and they change things, I think the carriers are still going to offer it. I don't think it'll be an automatic opt-in, It'll probably be an elective opt-in, but I would say it's definitely here to stay. And I think that, you know, these quote-unquote problems get presented, and then on a long enough timeline, you have more and more solutions to the problems that are new and that become age-old. And I think it just takes, you know, like Chris was saying, our vendors coming up with solutions, our organizations coming up with solutions, having conversations together about best practices, but dabbling, tinkering, mucking around, you know, I think it's very important to fix things that are unbroken, I guess is what I'm really saying. And dedicating resources, right? So dedicating resources, that also means hiring the right people, creative, introspective, diverse individuals, and giving them a voice at the table. I mean, you know, we're talking about younger consumers and they prefer to receive a text message or an email. Well, you better be hiring younger staff members that are a little more in tune with the WhatsApps of the world if you want some of those ideas to kind of bubble to the top.
Excellent. Thanks. Robert?
Yeah, so I'd say that, you know, short term, you know, 5-10 years, I don't think it's going to go away. I mean, I think that we're going to get better. The carriers will get better with, you know, making sure that, you know, we are who we say we are. And I think that the consumers will get better. But I mean, you know, long term, who's to say that in 10 or 20 years, you know, all of our conversations are going to be via like a FaceTime. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could definitely see if you would have told me 20 years ago that, you know, you can make great contact rates in the afternoon while people at work. Well, what do you mean? They haven't listened to their voicemail on their voicemail at home, you know? So I think that, you know, maybe in 10, 15, 20 years, it may be a situation where the norm is, you know, video chat. I mean, I think you could probably, you know, you could probably persuade some folks that, hey, you're not a scam, you know, if you can see their face. And I think that that's an important, you know, step. And I applaud the agency that tries to do that. I mean, I think it's innovative. So maybe, you know, this eventually goes away. I mean, with the thing that Elon Musk is putting in our brains, maybe we'll just be able to think about it and, you know, get somebody to pay their bill. I don't know. But I don't think the problem's going away anytime soon. I think that we have to try to create an incentive. And I think there is an incentive for the carriers. But you know, ultimately, you know, the only thing that we can do is control the things that we can change. So if it's something that I can't change, if it's not in my inner circle of influence, I don't really spend a lot of time there. So, you know, I worry about what I can control and focus on what I can influence. And then everything else, the chips are going to fall where they fall.
Well said. Chris?
It's permanent. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to start answering phone numbers differently than I do now when I don't know who it is. My time's limited, and everyone else's is also. I think that the way that we communicate with consumers, we are really, as a company, looking at how do we start doing this completely different than we do today. I think that that the pace of this is picking up rapidly. And within 5 years, it's going to be completely different than it is right now, if not sooner than 5 years. And I hope we get clarification from the CFPB in, you know, how we can text, how, you know, what is a safe harbor for leaving a voicemail? What, you know, how do we use email? You know, how do we do these things? Because I think phone communication will never completely go away, but it is drastically going to be changed.
Well, I appreciate that. Robert, Mike, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights and your perspective and your strategies with us today. I really appreciate it. Also want to thank one more time TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. I hope everyone goes to www.tcn.com to learn more about the company. I really appreciate that. Thanks again for participating in today's webinar. I hope everyone takes a minute to fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to identify topics and speakers that will be the best use to you going forward. Got more webinars coming up tomorrow, next week. Also have Demo Day coming up next week. We've got six companies, including TCN. We're gonna be presenting their products and services and 25-minute demonstrations available to everybody. I hope everyone goes to accountsrecovery.net/demo-day to sign up for the presentations. I think it's gonna be a great opportunity. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. Really appreciate that and your continued support. Chris, Mike, Robert, thank you so much. Excellent job. Really appreciate it. Hope you guys have a great day, just like everybody else. Take care.
Thank you.
Great time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.